This podcast is brought to you by LMU Munich.
So first of all, thank you both for inviting me. It's been a wonderful event, stimulating. Also, Marlene, thank you for the organization. I haven't been the easiest of your invitees or people you engage with. What I've tried to do is to, as you said, I think my talk brings together lots of the things we have been discussing. So last night I slipped out earlier and added some slides because I think visually some of the things, Tim's lecture as well, will link with some of the material worlds I will be talking about. But I hope that will bring the discussion to a more perhaps overview level where we can discuss how things start to connect. So yes, I'm aware of the time, so I will start now. So on January the 1st, 2017, the Japanese Postal Services circulated more than 3 billion New Year's cards, like this would be one of them. And so an average of 100 of these items arrives in every single Japanese home on this one day. Over the past 20 years, I have repeatedly witnessed this extravagant ritual of exchange, and it's quite something. The air is full of excitement and anticipation. People are really waiting in the morning for the post to arrive. It's quite interesting. So people will say, how many will arrive this year? Who will have the largest stack? And the stack will feature a lot in my talk. So of course, the number of cards people send and receive is much linked to age, gender, and status. And I come back to that later. So somebody like Mrs. Matsui or Mrs. Nishiki, who are both housewives in their 40s, they receive about 70 cards from family and friends. But somebody like Mr. Nishiki, who is a company boss, or Mr. Takahashi, university lecturer, or Mrs. Nakao, a designer, they get about 1,000. But all of this is eclipsed by people, public figures, and celebrities. And this slide brings this home, I hope. So this is from the archive. This is a very famous Japanese actress from the 1950s, and she received 39,000 of these things. So I just want to talk a bit about scale as I go on. And this is still very common for celebrities today. So lots of my other work really talks specifically of this exchange and how people use strategies to manage and maximize and maintain relations. But I'm not going to talk about this now because I really want to focus on the material processes, production, circulation, and consumption. And I hope to show how this very humble paper entity is very active and potent in cultivating and a participant in a way in cultivating, caring, and regenerating multi-temporal webs of social, economic, and spiritual connections in contemporary Japan. And I use the word web. It's a very inspiring Japanese microbiologist. I mean, other people, of course, in anthropology use this, but he uses the word in, and this his name is Minakata Kumagusu, and some people might know of him. In the 1910s, he wrote very visionary pieces about Japanese life, religion, science. But it's interesting, it links to some of the more scientific papers we had in the beginning. And he talks about the world as consisting of webs of visible and invisible orders, which he calls in and en. So it's cause and coincidence. And he said, and it goes back to Tim's lecture. It's very interesting that you mentioned Tacit, because he talks about the way people negotiate these visible and invisible world is through tact or tact. So, and he says this is like almost like a skill, a performance, a way to, as I said, navigate them. But also, people develop this tact. It's a way of heightened attention to something, heightened attention, and become attuned to an environment. That's the way which you would get it from the Japanese. Unfortunately, this man's work has not been translated. So it's really, but he has been writing this in the early 1900s. So I think it's a very interesting way to looking at some of the things I will go into. So the paper is very much work in progress, as we tend to say when we don't have many theoretical ideas yet. It's part of a larger research project that I conducted fieldwork in Japan about photographic practices. This is my latest fieldwork, which examines the interface between human relatedness, cosmology, Is it something wrong with the image? Cosmology and economics, so that's what it looks like. But I think Japan is such a fascinating country because, of course, it's a modern, complex, industrialized society, but it also has a very strong animistic worldview. And that's it. For the animistic sensibility is completely intertwined, I think, or interacted with the scientific and the technological. So there's no dualism there, if you want. So I think it will reflect back of some of the papers we've seen about animism already. So in a way, as you said, Gillian, it's a real quality in the world for people, this power. That can be anywhere and affect everybody. These are modern Japanese, so it's not some superstition. It's a real thing out there in the world. And I call it luck in my work. I mean, other people's, and I come back to the technology, and that's some of the research I've done. So the field work I did is based in the Kansai region of Japan. That's the urban area around Osaka, where 22 million people live. And that's kind of 20% of the population. So for this fieldwork, I've collected, because it's a seasonal fieldwork, because I look at the seasons and time, over a total of, I have collected about 9 months of fieldwork. But I know this area well because I lived there for 7 years, and I've done to date about two other ethnographies. And just, it's really nicely, this is a view of what the kind of the flavor of what this place in the world looks like. This is just a collage I did. But also, these are two other ethnographies I did before, as you see. This is interesting because, of course, it looks at the circulation of luck in Japan. It's a project. But I, of course, those of the anthropologists know The Fame of Gawa, a very famous book by Nancy Moon. Of course, it's a brilliant book that talks about the material world as expanding in space and time and constantly transforming the material. And she talks about, I mean, the Gawa is an island in the Kula Ring, and she talks how the tree that they cut to make the canoes eventually comes back as an immaterial thing, as fame or prestige. And I did this the same for this island in Japan where they do a similar thing. And my second ethnography, as you mentioned, was an ethnography inside Japanese homes, which look at the mess and the stuff and at blockages of luck. And I was saying earlier, it's kind of a constipated luck. So luck is not moving. And you see this often in blockages, and that's linking with some of the things that were said already. The luck in Japan, or the energy, what another term you can use, needs to circulate very much. So this is just the intro. I mean, I just was going to show you this slide, because the people I'm working with, they're kind of, the youngest is Naru-chan, she's 15, and the oldest is Mr. Harai, who's 90. And this is him in earlier, in his 50s, he was a very avid amateur, actually. But he's showing me here, he's using digital cameras and a printer. But that comes out. So these are the people I worked with. So what is a Japanese New Year's card? And that's the Nenga Hagaki. So they look like this. So that's a Japanese New Year's card. The front is, what makes it a Japanese New Year's card is that it's sold and produced by the post office. That's very important. And the front is left empty, so you can personalize it. The elements here are quite important. So this is, of course, the stamp, which always has a lucky motif on it, often the zodiac animal. Then this Nenga makes it like a seasonal greeting. But I'm really interested in this last bit, which is what, I mean, this is sent to me. I didn't want to use too many Japanese people's names, so I'm part of their network, if you want, so I get sent these as well. Not 39,000, luckily. But as you see here, sometimes the stamp is again a zodiac animal. So this strip, and every card that arrives and comes to the post office, and most people buy these, enters you into a lottery, a nationwide lottery. So these are your numbers. And this is your zodiac animal again. And then it says here, Otoshidama, which means literally the spirit of the god of the year. Toshi, a year, and Tama, Tamashi, spirit or soul. And where this comes from is this thing. So this is the Toshidama that is still every first year. I mean, I'm going to talk you through some kind of material transformations. And this explains why Japan has been so successful, I think, in intertwining animism, technology, and science. So this is offered, it's a kagami mochi. Mochi are pounded rice cakes. So they're hard rice cakes. They're offered to the deity. And the whole idea, they're called kagami mochi. The idea is, it's so you offer these, and then they're redistributed among the community. And it's very important, you can never cut these things, because then you cut the bond or the thread. Or it's used thread as well. So they're often destroyed with a hammer, and then the pieces are distributed, often in soups or other things, to the community. But what is so fascinating, this would be, I missed an A there, so it's Dhamma, Toshi Dhamma. This would be, and still in the houses that I work, people still do this, so it's not that it's something completely in the past. But what it has many transformations, and one of them is it has become money. These are Otashi Dhamma envelopes that are given to children. Again, redistribution of wealth. Little piece in China, you have it as well, actually, where it's redistributed. But I think the card is just another transformation, another way in which this is done. And what if it's not so far off to think that actually the cards, and I think I wrote it times, but better. So the card is actually the post office, and by extension, the state, which owns one third of the post office. Until 2004, it was completely public, but now it's half privatized. So it shares its good fortune or its wealth with the rest of the country. And other ways in which wealth is redistributed is, for example, you have cards with nationwide gift aid campaigns, for example, the tsunami. Then the gift aid went all there, so the luck went in that direction because there was definitely energy blockage and unluck, or misfortune, not unluck. But also, for example, you have some cars have like carbon offset, so it's to re-energize the environment if you want. So this is the processes that are used. This card is from the first. It's very right after the war that this started to happen. It's 1949. This is the card advertising the prizes. So the first prize was a sewing machine. So, I mean, you would say, but that was a luxury item then. It was 140 pounds or, 20,000 yen. So almost like a month's salary for people. This time, it's more like a trip to Hawaii or something that you get if you win the first prize. Very few people I spoke with. People have won cameras or bicycles, but that's kind of the main prize. But most people win this. So you get stamps. And the stamps are called Otoshi Dhamma. But it's interesting, people, they're commemorative, so people don't use them. So they're kind of kept. And my collection, this is from the year of the dog, 82, the year of the dog, 94, the year of the dog, 2006. But people keep these. But at the same time, the same stamps are circulating en masse, obviously, because people, you also, in the post, they sell them to put on the cards or other items you want to send. So that I want to show both. But also, if you don't buy a card in the post office, you can buy this kind of stamp, which is an Otoshi Dhamma stamp. It adds a number, so you can still participate in the lottery, even if you don't buy their card. And this is some people who really are into craft, and they don't want this kind of mass-produced card. They often use a normal card and add this stamp, so the people, the recipient, can still participate in the sharing of the good luck, if you want. Give you a breather. So on purpose, I've shown you lots of zodiac animals because I want to give the impression of the number of animals flooding into or stampeding into people's homes. And it's kind of interesting because it's the stamp, but also on the front, often what's there is zodiac animals in sketch form, but also photographic impressions. Lots of children with zodiac animals, cow things on. Of course, the zodiac animal is a very important principle or device in Japan, and it links with Taoistic ideas of cosmic principles of change and transformation. So most contemporary Japanese, I think, anticipate there will be times of calamities or misfortune. And of course, they live on an island where there's earthquakes and disasters. They had many, the idea is, in order to offset this bad luck, you gather a lot of good luck. So that's what this system is doing, if you want. So the new year is the main period where this is necessary, the regeneration of the whole year. And people really cleanse themselves of anything. It's a cleaning process leading up to the new year. You clean the house, you clean your bank account, you clean everything to start anew. So it's a regeneration. The animals are, of course, linked with the lunar calendar introduced from China. But it's interesting, again, and I'm going to talk about time at the end. Yes, but that has been replaced in 1872 by the Shindeki, or the Western calendar, if you want. So this is still a remnant, a residue of that, which is particularly now linked with the new year. But, of course, the zodiac animals are part of a sequence of 12 series, and then a larger 60-year cycle of regeneration and decay. So you, with these things, you connected to that as well. I want to stress very. So what I want to stress is how the zodiac animals work is actually. I mean, it's a bit of a bold statement. The substance doesn't matter. So they can be made of any materials. Can be wood, can be plastic, can be whatever. The form is important. And this is quite interesting. And how they, I mean, not only the animals, the zodiac animals, but also the other lucky objects. It's often to homophonic magic, which means, for example, frogs are also lucky animals. In Japanese, they're called kairu. But kairu also means to return. So it's not the meaning of the word, but the similarity or the duplication of the sound that matters. So that's how these objects work. The zodiac animal is a temporal object. It only works for 1 year. And that's when it's activated. It's like beaming, if you want, during that year. It brings in luck during that year. And at the end of the year, it should be destroyed or given away and replaced with a new cycle. So it's a yearly cycle. So that's the point. But I don't want to create a new duality, this kind of, we had, if you want, matter, and now it's form. No, I think perhaps it's more, because I think historically, and the data is not there, but my research on the island with these wooden objects you saw, the fame of Miyajima, in that place, you could see historically, I did some work in the archive, of course, materials mattered as well. So these wooden objects were made from sacred trees, and then the power came from the institute. But as the resources were limited, they switched to this. So it's form that's duplicated. It's a very clever way of, even if your resources are drained, your ecology is destroyed, you can still keep the energy flowing. So there might be a revival back to the other system. So I'm not saying either or. But these objects, they're like, I call them channels or conduits. So they kind of, if you see them, they open up they channel the energy into your home often. And what's so fascinating about the fact that it's their form and they're not linked with, through the material, with the religious institutions, means that both religion and commerce has embraced them. So there's a huge trade of these objects because they work anyway, whether they're from a religious place or they're from a commercial business. So this, and the next slide shows that this is a normal configuration of what people would have the start of the year. So these are just, often they're gifts as well. These are gifts just from a local shop, like an ornament. This is from a shrine. It's a little bell to awaken the spirits. And this is you can see, but it's the same motif. And it's kind of, it's a lucky arrow that shoots away bad luck. But just to show you, and what's so interesting in Japan is, I mean, I call them spiritual commodities because they successfully intertwine the commercial and the sacred economy, if you want. So what a crucial role in all this is played by the post office, because the post office offers the infrastructure to maintain this circulation, and no effort or resource is saved to make this happen. And very, as I said, it's crucial that they arrived on the first day. That's the whole point. So they all live up to this moment. There is this event where they open up the New Year's cards are being sold, and they have to be posted by December 25th. These are celebrities, so they spend a lot of money. Just a very famous soccer player, or a football player, as we say. So they also they promote it at famous events, like this is the new Tokyo Sky Tower. Is it Sky Tower? Sky, yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't spend much time in Tokyo, but so when that was opened, they then had the postman with the character linked to that advertising the New Year season. But also physically, they changed the post boxes. So this is the slot only for New Year's cards. And there's a huge army of volunteers that drive around on these scooters on the 1st of January. They're crisscrossing the city. So this is Nenga Hagaki. It's for New Year's cards. And they're mainly students, so they work throughout the New Year's period, basically. And the last part of that infrastructure, and I'm quite interested in as well, is their website. They have a whole website dedicated to the New Year's card, where you buy them, but also where you can download software packages to make them, to download with your phone, and I come back to that later. But also these commercial businesses, I think, they have now the ritual knowledge. Because it used to be in the family, in the community, the shrines. But they, and on these sites, you find anything you need to know to do the ritual properly. And it's very, people download it, so they can still do the form that it needs to be done. But in Japan, you have it for funerals, for weddings. It's the commercial companies that keep this alive as well as you want. So it's interesting. I mean, they're also on Facebook. And I like this image because this shows how the city is also connected with the countryside, where the cards also go. The luck goes all the way out there. So that's so it's you see them in the city, but they go all the way to very remote hamlets. So these cards, what are they doing? So these are two examples. So as I said, they're seasonal greetings. So this would be, every card has this, it's something, Akemashite, Omedetou Gozaimasu. It's like congratulations on the opening of the year. So that's the formal seasonal greeting. Then this is something, it's a gratitude, a thank you for favors you have received. Onegaishimasu, so you have received things. And this, so these two things are very much linked with the sphere of work as well. So it's often people send to their teachers or their doctors. So it's, you have that. But then, I mean, so that most cards have that. But then there's also, if you send it to friends or family, you add a layer of writing if you want. And that's what people say, the cards, you express sympathy and concern by kind of adding a little bit of handwriting. This is a student adding it for the teacher, saying, "Sensei, I hope you like my design." This you can't read, but she says, "I hope I will improve my characters as well in the next year." But of course, writing, like in many cultural contexts, is imbued with the person. So it's a kind of, but also showing you can write skillful, balanced characters is considered to be a way of self-cultivation and showing you're a mature adult. The other thing the cards are doing is sending information about birth, weddings, and new addresses. It's like a fluid database as well, changes. But also, and this is interesting, when people exit life, when they pass away, the family will send this to say, this year we're not sending, we're in mourning. So there's no connections. And that's interesting in my work. You see this, as I said, this heightened period that you exchange, and then there's a period of isolation or non-exchange. And particularly when people die, that's a period where you're not participating in that. It's a very common idea. So what happens on the first day is these stacks arrive. But what I think, and I said again, I'm going to read a little bit because I'm aware of the time. So what's so interesting is that they arrive on the same day. So you're kind of confronted with the totality of all your relations. And size matters, particularly for the male household head, because he can show he has gathered relationships. But he has also gathered luck that he then distribute amongst his family. And what's so interesting, when you live with the people in their homes, the cards, at particular times in the year, they become singularized, they become concrete entities. So that's so interesting. And of course, the main time is on the first day of the year. So they arrive as all your relations. But then on the first day of the year, when you have the lucky food and you're drinking, you also pass around the cards and share them. And you touch them and you talk about it. And that's what I was saying yesterday, this distance and closeness also happens. So at this point, it's kind of very much a tactile engagement with these objects. And what is it, the closeness of the body, drinking, eating. So they're part of creating a sociality of heat. In Japan, it's all about creating heat. It's funny, it's in the cold season that you create this heat, of course. But the second time, and this is very much, I mean, I have, and then what I wanted to talk, and this links with, oh, it's the image is not so good. Of course, the whole house during this time is a channel. And the ropes, so they use a rope to connect. And that was so interesting, using the rope. So this makes the house like a sacred space for that period. So the ropes, so the whole house is a channel where the luck comes in. This is a traditional one. This is contemporary. But also, of course, you know these things in Japanese shrines. And while Tim was talking about ropes, of course, these are energy points, and this is one of Izumo's shrine, the oldest or second after Ise, a really important energy point in Japan, where these giant ropes are there. They link back the energy. And of course, this one, and it links back with your wrapping of stones, I thought was interesting. These are at the Ise shrine, if you want, the entry. The Ise shrine is the main shrine in Japan. But these are the, this is symbolizing or embodying, I don't like symbolizing as well, the married couple, which were the creators of Japan, and they're connected. So if you get married in Japan, it's making a connection. And divorce is literally, you say, enokiru, cutting the connection. But what was interesting, and that's why I use it, this stamp was used the first time on New Year's cards. So it's again interesting, now there's zodiac animals, but it used to be referring back to these issues. I'm going to go a bit farther. But what's so interesting, and that I'm almost done. So the new technologies are smartphones, computers, color printers have eased the process of making these. And what's so interesting is, of course, digital photography. So this is, on the New Year's Day, they sell a lot of color printers. But also lots of the cards now have digital photos. And people don't, two-thirds of them are like this, but people generally don't like them. They either say, like they would call this jimon, it's boasting, you show off. It's not very well-respected quality in Japan. Or this is called hazukashi. It's embarrassing because they show too much. It's an old couple intimate. You don't show that. People really make a lot of comments. But then other cards like these are now mainly elderly people who go to craft school, have a lot of time. They make them by hand. So this is an 8-year-old lady. But what's interesting, they call them made by hand, but it's complete hybrid. It's an ambiguous term of machine and human labor because she draws a ink painting, her daughter scans it, make multiple copies, and then she just adds a little color. But that's completely acceptable, so that's interesting to show. So, and I'm almost at the end, bear with me, because I had a lot to go through. So I think the use of the internet and computers are acceptable to making them, but what puzzled me, why do they resist circulation? So why are they not digitally circulated if there is no... So that, and first I thought it's this process of imbuing it with feeling through the hand, through making, that was important. But then I realized actually what was more important was this, the Toshidama, because now you have people, I mean, this is the WhatsApp version of, in Japan, it's LINE, and they now start promoting, this is their mascot, they start putting Toshidama, so this kind of, that links it with the spiritual world. You can, for £10 and 10 yen extra, you're also entered in a lottery draw. They do their own. So people also, and that has really increased the sending of digital wishes. This is the one that I was sent. But I'm ambiguous. I think, of course, what it allows is people who live alone, for example, changes in Japanese social life. They can, because if you cannot share them in the home and this physical process, this enables you to participate in this perhaps more country-wide exchange of luck. Or, I said also, in an economic crisis, so it's linked with that, in an or the crisis in Fukushima, then you see the luck is pushed in one direction or to the countryside. So it's, if it goes bad in Japan, the lucky items tend to go up economically. So now to conclude, what I want to get at is this notion of time. So these objects or items, as I call them, conduits, are conduits of luck. So they channel it into the home. And in a way, they make materially present events that are distributed across time. And it's this notion of time as duration, which, of course, somebody like Bergson talks about as well, whereby different temporalities coexist that emerge as overlapping tendency in the present. On January the 1st, for example, you see an overall orientation to the future, which is then enveloped by the actualized memories on the card of past occurrences. However, at the same time, the cards also embed people in a natural cycle of the seasons, the cycle of life and death, the zodiac animals and the 60-year cycle, but also the temporal processes. There is a reverse temporal process whereby people anticipate these unknown futures, but they, by anticipating what's going to happen, they also have ramifications for the future. So they're thinking both about the future and the past. But what I'm trying to work through, and this might not work very well yet, is that how actually the process of doing that in the home, from the stack to the concrete, it's more like time evolving and it's expanding and contracting. So when they look at when the cards come in as a stack, it's time contracted. So it's almost like a singular time. But as they take the cards out, it's like multiple possibilities, but it expands. I think that's Japanese, it's more like a wave. Time comes and time goes, but it keeps on evolving. So it's not just linking the past and the present. And somehow, I think how in the home this is done through lots of the lucky items embodies that or refers to that. But I'm going to end there because I think it took up a lot of your time. Thank you.